At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at AbilityChiro.com.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Me, Joe Forrester, Matt Beadle and Rich Lee is of course with us. We're going to be joined today by David Button, Spurs, Brentford, Fulham, Brighton. He's going to be in the studio talking to us about his career and through the goalkeeping topics of the day. If you want to get in touch with the show, it's pretty easy to do so. All you need to do is search GK Union on Facebook and Twitter. The hashtag is GK Union on Instagram. And if you want to get in touch, hello@goalkeepersunion.net. In association with GK Icon, all your goalkeeping needs for the next generation. So it's very exciting times here at the Goalkeepers Union podcast. The letters have been arriving in their droves. Carrier pigeons, telegrams. We have correspondence, don't we, Max?
So we have had an email from a Nick Brathwaite.
Hang on, an email.
You got to start somewhere.
Got to start somewhere. This is it. Build it and they will come.
Yes, Nick Brathwaite from Belper in Derbyshire. Hi guys, enjoying the show. Great to have some goalkeeping insight. Says especially from an ex-Blackburn goalkeeper, Rich. So he's recognised the fact you played for Blackburn.
Oh yeah, I was a vital cog.
How many games was it, mate?
Well, it wasn't necessarily... It's the same thing about when I went to Fulham. It's not necessarily about the games you play. It's about the impact you have on a club.
But can you have an impact on the club without playing games?
Well, you could be the good guy in the dressing room. You've heard that a lot, like he's a great character in the dressing room. Although I don't think...
Were you? I don't think I was even that.
I was actually very young. It was the time of Bellamy, Savage, that era. Mark Hughes as the manager. It was a lot of fun.
So Morton, Gams, Pedersen?
Yeah, yeah.
That time?
Yeah,
that's good.
Great left foot. And Brad Friedel, of course, was the goalkeeper.
Did you learn a lot from Brad?
I did, yes. Do you want me to elaborate?
Yeah, I'll elaborate.
No, I did. He is the most consistent man, the most consistent human being, which kind of aligns quite nicely with him as a goalkeeper. Like, very few errors. He would turn up every day and he was always in a good mood. He was one of these individuals. And I'll tell you what, the very first day I was there, he gave me a book, Yoga for Men.
Did he?
He did. And that explains, obviously, why he went on into his 40s. He did yoga every single day, very centered.
Did you do the yoga yourself?
I wish I had, and that's probably why I retired at 32. I didn't, and I to a lot of the young goalkeepers now, I say it's vital. If you can get into that and really help balance, because you put your body through such a vigorous routine when you're a goalkeeper. You're up, down all the time. You're working the muscles hard. So something like yoga, Pilates, is a great thing to do alongside being a goalkeeper. And I know that Brad did it. He'd go on his own every single day into the big dome that they had at Blackburn, and he'd spend half an hour every day just going through his different yoga poses.
That's an extraordinarily dramatic image. Brad Friedel in the middle of a deserted dome doing yoga surrounded by insects. Do you know what? Because Brad Friedel looks a bit like a henchman from a computer game, I didn't have him down as being zen.
Really?
He is.
Yeah. He is indeed. Yeah, he is. He's great guy. Still got a lot of time for him. He's obviously manager of New England now.
Brad the lad. There we go.
On with the emails.
Let's crack on.
He's actually gone for you a bit here, Rich. I'm quite enjoying this. He said, Rich, checked out your penalty shootouts online. Not bad. He's put in brackets, even if some of them were actually posted by you. Is this true?
What do you mean? Posting?
There's clips of you saving penalties, but you've posted them yourself.
Well, no, I put together a highlights reel.
Here we go.
That's okay, surely.
Yeah. You
know? I bet, look, here we go. We'll speak to the man here who I'm sure has put up a show reel.
Yep.
There you go.
You can find it at joeforrester.co.uk.
It's exactly the same thing, of course. I had a good season. I was quite proud of my season, so I wanted it as a keepsake.
I was involved in a charity football tournament this week, and in order to get through the quarter final, we had a penalty shootout. And as our keeper Donny was in nets, I thought, do I have time to run on and tell him the Rich Lee technique? The old crouch and spring. Luckily, Donny saved a couple of pens. Actually, I've got to say, blind luck from Donny. But we progressed, and it was an amazing moment. But I was thinking, oh, the Rich Lee technique here. It is the best penalty saving technique I love it. You go into a tiny ball and then explode outwards.
There's a reason for it.
Yes.
It's like a Pokemon.
Yes. Yeah. That was exactly what I was modelling it on.
When they're evolving.
No, the whole idea is, this was my thinking, and there's no truth in this, by the way, but I'm going to tell you anyway. Make yourself really small so the goal looks really big, so then the striker might just take it a little bit easy. Not maybe hit it right in the corner, because they're thinking, do you know what, the goalie's tiny. Mm. Like, I can put it maybe just a little bit further inside, be a bit safer with my shot. So it meant that if I went the right way, so often the penalties weren't particularly good and I was able to make the save.
But you're a master of neurolinguistic programming, aren't you?
I am.
I couldn't even say the word. Neurolinguistic programming. So you psychologically thought, well, he's just going to sort of take a lackadaisical approach.
There was, do you know, there's a few things I'd always do. Run up to a penalty, and I'll run through them very quickly. One was to see how the player positioned the ball, because subconsciously, sometimes they'll do it and they'll put the mitre sign facing a corner, which is a little subconscious cue as to which way they might go. The angle of run-up would also dictate sometimes where they went. The type of player. So if it was a big, strong centre-back, they're more likely to run up and punt it rather than maybe a tricky winger who might look to go back on himself and maybe, or even try and dink you and chip you. Mm-hmm. So again, there were sort of several things that I would take into account before taking the penalty. And then actually in goal myself, it would be right, focus on the ball, make myself very small initially, a big clap just before they hit it to try and make some noise, and then explode. Whether I went right, left, or stayed down the middle, making sure you fully commit to it.
And while we're on penalties, should we jump straight into one of our talking points?
Well, can we maybe finish Nick's email first?
Let's finish Nick's. We can.
Poor bloke, he's flipping emailed into us and we haven't even got to the end of his message yet.
Well, the fact that he's gone for me a little bit, I don't really care if we do finish it or not, if I'm honest.
Yeah, do you know what, Nick? We don't take kindly to criticism on this show.
As much as we say email us anything, no, just email us positivity,
kindness,
please.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll quickly do it, shall
we? Okay, go on.
He said, for years we've seen ridiculous figures thrown around for outfield players. Why did it take so long for the same to happen with goalkeepers? And are they justified? He's also put a PS here, by the way, and said it was the Schmeichel spider. I'm presuming he's referring to the spread that we were talking about last week with regards to what it was. Schmeichel spider, apparently. Is that what it was called when they...
last week when we were talking
Schmeichel
about
spider.
That. Oh, right.
I
had not heard that, but... There you go, Schmeichel. Yeah, it makes sense. Right. He used to spread himself in that way. Yeah, are they worth it? 100%. I think the realisation now, we look at the Premier League as it is, the best goalkeepers are the goalkeepers that are playing at the very top of the league. And the top teams need an outstanding goalkeeper. And there's more and more knowledge of what makes a good goalkeeper, which is important. And that's partly what we're doing here, I guess. Like, making someone understand what makes an effective goalkeeper, not just the obvious things that you might see, the extravagant saves and what have you. Now, there is a real realisation as to how a goalkeeper can impact a game in an attacking sense, as well as just being the last line of defence.
Bernd Leno's first game against a potential title rival, I suppose what you call it, a top six team. Let's be realistic about where Arsenal are. Bit of a mixed bag, two great saves, big error. Question marks over Milner's goal. I'm interested actually as well in Bernd Leno, because I've been thinking about the whole keepers playing with their feet thing, and actually Petr Cech's been kind of hard done by, because when Petr Cech first started out, he must have thought, well, the whole playing with my feet thing isn't an issue. And I kind of wonder where you are on all of that, and obviously with Alisson's role as well, Rich.
Yeah, I mean, quite a lot to go through that. I think with Leno in particular yesterday, it was interesting watching him. And from a psychological standpoint, it looked to me like he was chasing the game. Mm. Now, goalkeepers will appreciate what I mean here, where there's a bit of a cliche, an old saying, which doesn't make a lot of sense when you actually listen to it, where they'll say, like, oh, you know, I need to make a save. When I make a save, then I feel good. You know, I need to make an early save. Now, the problem with goalkeeping is you can't force the issue. You've got to allow the game to come to you. It's not like being a midfielder when you can start to dictate play and get on the ball early, get a few passes under your belt. Mm. Can't really do that as a goalkeeper. You're only given what you're given. It looked to me yesterday, and this would be a sign of nerves, which is understandable. He's still young and he's wanting to make a good impression. He looked like he was chasing the game. Mm. You know, the cross that he came for should never have come for. And you can see halfway when he's come, he's made the decision that I'm not going to get there. So the next best thing, I'm going to try and make the save from the header, which is why he did the big spread, which apparently is called the Schmeichel spider. And that's why he did that, because he realised halfway he wasn't going to come. I know this because I've done this myself a couple of times, where you come halfway, you realise you're not going to get there. You've then got a choice. Do you stay in no man's land and they might just head it over you? Mm. Or do you come the whole way? And people would often say, if you're going to come, come the whole way and take everyone out. It's what he did. It didn't look great. It was the wrong decision. And then in the end, they hit the post and it could have been a very costly error. But that to me was a sign that he was looking to force the issue and chase the game when you just can't do that.
It's interesting, isn't it, Matt? You picked up as well on a piece of commentary from the game.
Yeah, it was just interesting. Look, I don't want this to be a podcast digging out commentators and co-commentators and outfield players and what they're saying about goalkeepers. But Darren Fletcher, after that incident that you're referring to, when he came out and wiped Van Dijk and Milner out, said, there are so many more facets to a goalkeeper's game now. You know, they can play with the ball at their feet. But are they as sound and solid in what they have to do as they should be?
And look,
and McManaman backed it up. Yeah, if he just stayed on his line, it would have flashed across goal.
The thing is, the game's progressed so much. Like, you look at 30, 40 years ago, it always interests me when I watch a game from years ago. And it's often on Sky, you've got the classics. Mm. And you watch it, and the game is completely different. The ball does move quicker now. And I know that outfield players get on goalkeepers for that. Oh, you're always moaning about the ball moving. No, the ball moves quicker now. Players are better now. They're more intelligent. Techniques that you used before, like Schmeichel running out and spreading at a player, wouldn't work as well now, because players are so clever when it comes to finishing the football. You know, the likes of Aguero, Messi, Ronaldo, they've got techniques to counteract what goalkeepers are doing. So goalkeepers are always looking to find new techniques. The wall technique that you see a lot now. So at the point of impact, they create this wall where they move slightly side on, hands down by their side, in order to make as big a wall as they can. You've got what's called the long body as well, which is where they come out effectively and do the splits. Goalkeepers are creating new techniques to try and deal with the fact that the game's getting better and better. So no, goalkeepers aren't getting worse in terms of their actual goalkeeping. They're getting better, but they've had to add the distribution into that as well. So it's very easy to see one mistake in a game and then say, oh, do you know what? Are goalkeepers as good as they were? Yes, they are. They're better than they were. The game is getting harder and harder, and goalkeepers are having to adapt to that.
One of the things that I think football fans always question is when they see a goal scored through a goalkeeper's legs. It's something that you always think, oh, should you do better? I certainly don't think a striker is ever aiming to put it through someone's legs. I always think that's luck. I must say.
Do you know what? A good example, so we'll talk of Leno, and on a positive, made a very good save from Van Dijk, which he probably didn't get enough credit for. The reason it was a good save is the ball was played over to Van Dijk. Now, I'll explain it step by step. He takes two steps backwards, firstly. And the reason he does that, because had Van Dijk have volleyed it, it would have been a shot. Therefore, he needs to be 2 yards, 3 yards off his line to give himself the most reaction time, good positioning to make the save. The second Van Dijk takes a touch, it turns from a shot to a one-on-one. At this point, you need to close the angle, which he did. He moved 4 yards very quickly, and then he got to within 2 yards. And at that point, he then spread to make a very, very good save. He created the wall, and he was very big, and in the end, he made a brilliant save. Hit him in the chest, but had it gone slightly to either side, he still would have made the save. So the decision was perfect, the execution was perfect, and it was a great technique. It would never have gone through his legs. Interestingly, we had a couple from the weekend that did go through the legs. I know you were going to touch on this.
Joe Hart and Rui Patricio.
Yeah, and again, they're never errors, because it's a one-on-one situation. The striker's expected to score. They're never errors. However, at the point of impact, how many gaps are there? How many holes are there in your technique? Can it go through your legs? If it does, you could argue that you haven't quite executed the wall at the right time. You know, if you get it spot on, like Leno did, in fairness to him, I think we saw a great one from Begovic last week, if I remember rightly as well. If you get it spot on, in fact, no, it was yesterday.
Against Luke Shaw. Yeah.
It was against Luke Shaw. You get it spot on, then you can close down that gap. It's going to be difficult to beat you through the legs. If you get your arms in the right position as well, it's going to need to go right in the corner, maybe even in the top corner, in order to beat you.
I, to be fair, I know you've just said there, Joe, that you don't think a striker is ever aiming to go through a goalkeeper's legs. I think that's doing an injustice to strikers. I think you'd get strikers saying, no, no, we're taught how to finish, and actually we know that's very difficult for a goalkeeper to save.
Okay, let me, I suppose, Cristiano Ronaldo, yes. Clinton Morrison, not so much. do you know what I mean? Because sometimes, I personally just think, with so much of the goal to aim at, you'd have to be, I suppose, an incredibly, because obviously the pace you're thinking at and all that kind of thing, to have all of that goal around you and to think, I'm specifically going through his legs.
I'll tell you what, you'll find, interestingly, we had interesting one today with Morata. Morata's gone through one-on-one with Hennessy.
Yeah, yeah.
Hennessy stood up and made the save. Morata tried to chip it over him. Now, look, it's a good save in the end. Now, Hennessy was quite far out of his goal. This is where strikers, as much as you'd think, they're going through one-on-one and they've got all these decisions going on in their mind. They shouldn't have all these decisions going on in their mind, because you think of a Harry Kane, he's got a very similar type finish. We were talking earlier on air, actually, about this, about how, like, Thierry Henry, if you picture a Thierry Henry goal, we'll each have a similar goal in mind, because they've practiced it over and over and over.
Open your body out, far corner.
So this is it. So if you're a striker going one-on-one with a goalkeeper, it shouldn't be potluck as to what you do. You should have rules as to what you're going to do. If the goalkeeper's deep in their goal, you might take it in quite a way, you might slot it. If a goalkeeper's far out of their goal, you might then look to go round the goalkeeper, because of course, the further out that a goalkeeper is, the more space behind the goalkeeper, so it's easier to go round the goal. For instance, Morata should have gone round Hennessy. Hennessy stood up well, he read Morata, made the save. If you're Morata, you should go round the goalkeeper at that point, with a goalkeeper being 15 yards from goal. So going back to the point about going through the legs, it should be something they've practiced. They should know how a goalkeeper reacts to a one-on-one situation. If they see that as a weakness, when they leave a gap between the legs, then the very best strikers will exploit it.
Should we talk Jordan Pickford?
Let's.
As well, it's always an issue about coming for crosses, isn't it? I don't know what the rules are on when you come for a cross, when you don't come for a cross, when you stay and when you go, and you said to yourself you've misjudged it a couple of times. That Brighton goal, the cross fell inside the six-yard box. Should Jordan Pickford have come for it?
I think he'll be disappointed, and the reason is, when the ball was played back for the cross, he didn't really take a big enough step out. Now, again, the rules of goalkeeping would state that if a winger goes down the wing and then cuts it back to the fullback, for the fullback to put the cross in, so they're not by the byline, you've got the opportunity to take 2 or 3 yards and be that little bit more advanced. If you watch the replay, Jordan didn't really get far enough advanced. So when the ball was crossed in, he was quite deep. He was pretty much on his line, which then made it very difficult to come for in the position he was in. Had he had taken 2 steps, then I think he could come for that ball and he could probably get at least a punch to it, because in the end, as you say, it was headed from a good, 4 yards, 5 yards. So, and he looked a little bit disappointed.
It's an error though, no? That's an error, because if that ball is going into that area, if a Brighton player, which is what happened, gets his head on that ball, there is no way that he's going to save that, because they are so close to the goal.
You're right. You are. Look, he was disappointed. So is it an error? Yeah, black and white, it's an error. The interesting thing is no one picked up on it as an error. If you listen to the commentary, no one said, oh, Jordan's got... Now, what about the goalkeeper that does come and doesn't get there? What about Leno? Comes for that ball, doesn't get there, they head it, hits the post. Everyone sees that as an error because he came. Yet no one's really questioned Jordan Pickford, which is, and goes back to the point of us creating this show. That's a great example of a lack of knowledge, not picking up on commentators, but 95% of people will have watched that. 99% of people would have watched that and not really questioned Jordan Pickford. But a lot of goalkeepers and goalkeeper coaches would have watched that and be like, oh, do you know what? You might have been able to come for that.
As always, if you've got any opinions on anything we've talked about this week, you can search GK Union on Facebook and Twitter, or hello@goalkeepersunion.net. Right, up next, our guest is David Button. Our guest this week is a product of the Tottenham youth system, played for Brentford, Fulham, and is now at Brighton. David Button, welcome to the podcast.
Yep, no, thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here.
David, so let's first start with Spurs. So you came through the youth system at Tottenham. How was that for you?
Obviously a great experience. Growing up as a Spurs fan and being able to join them at 9 years old was obviously a bit of a dream come true. Managed to make one appearance as well, which I still cling on to. it was look back with it with fond memories.
So obviously moving on after that and then going out on loan. How does the loan system affect players? Because there's so much talk about it at the moment, isn't it? I think Chelsea have 40-something players out on loan. Is it a positive experience for a young player and specifically a goalkeeper?
Yeah, I think so. I certainly look back at it as a key part of my development, and it's definitely something that I'd recommend to younger goalkeepers to get as many games as they can do, really.
Obviously, I know Tony Parks was a big part of your development when you were younger. Was he a big reason as to why you went on so many loans?
I think so. I think a lot of them were under his his guide, so to speak. He came in when I was 19, and I'd worked with him previously at England. So, it was a strange time, really, because the under-23s league that's been created now wasn't around when I was there. So, if you look back at a lot of the players around my sort of age, a lot of them went on loan to get that experience, because it's like I say, it's either that you're going and testing yourself against men, or you're sitting in a reserve team that's not involved in any league, has probably got 10 players training, and you're sort of just going through the motions. So, I often get asked, like, why have I been on so many loans, as though it's a bad thing. But for me, I could have easily sat there and done nothing and been quite comfortable and happy at Spurs, but I didn't want that. I wanted to go out and push myself in other ways and to experience men's football and get as many games as I could.
What was your best loan?
My favourite was probably Shrewsbury.
Was it really?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I guess it's a big part of what we obviously talk about, the psychology of football, but I just loved it there. I felt really at home. Yeah, got on with all the players, and it was just a happy time for me. So I think that reflected on the pitch. Yeah, obviously it was League Two, so you could arguably say that I should pick a Championship loan or whatever I've had as being a slightly better one, but that one certainly sticks out in my mind in terms of how I felt and my performances as well.
And toughest?
Toughest, certainly Bournemouth, which was my first loan as in the league. Obviously, I'd been at Grays before that, playing in the conference. But yeah, no, I had a real, real tough time at Bournemouth. Can't remember how many games I played in the end. Probably fully played 4 games and made as many mistakes. Oh, so you? Yeah,
they didn't make up a song for you then, though.
Not when I was there. I've had a few since I've been back.
So you talk about Spurs in particular. 5 years. You were a pro there, right? Around 5 years?
Yeah, 5-6 years, yeah.
That one game, that 9 minutes,
yeah.
Did you think after that, this is my chance now, I'm in?
Not really, to be honest. Obviously, I'd been called back from a loan due to an injury to Gomez. Yeah, I suppose technically then I was second choice. I sat on the bench in a few Premier League games, but... yeah, I mean, the game, I think they're winning 5-0 or something already. So he's looked around at the bench and thought, like, it's obviously a nice thing for him to do rather than,
injury.
No, it wasn't through injury, no.
Oh, right.
Yeah, which was, I don't know, probably strange and probably hasn't happened a lot. But
was that under Harry Redknapp, that? Sorry.
That was Harry Redknapp, yeah.
Okay.
But
did you keep a clean sheet?
Yeah.
Oh, amazing. Yeah, there can't be too many goalkeepers in Tottenham's history that have not
never conceded a goal. Yeah.
Technically, you're our best ever keeper. Yeah. Should we talk about, it's still a moment that Brentford fans talk about. It really is. 2013, it's a big turning point in your career because you dislodged Richard Lee. I mean, arguably the man,
100% true.
The cult hero of Brentford. Yeah.
Oh, do you know what? At Griffin Park, they still thank you for this. He dislodged Richard Lee as Brentford's number one. Rich, okay, you said it. What really happened?
Well, I hadn't played the previous season. I was back up to Simon Moore for the majority of the season. Then obviously went to Cardiff and you came in.
Yeah, and you were injured when I signed.
I was injured. This is true.
Soften it.
I was out for 7 months with a shoulder injury.
Was Rich encouraging as a kind of an elder statesman? was he encouraging?
Not that much older.
Did you feel like it was a supportive atmosphere that Rich gave you?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, like a granddad of the dressing room.
Dreadful bad.
Like a wise old wizard the dressing room. But how was that experience at Brentford?
Yeah, no, loved it. Again, had a little bit of a shaky start, but I think once obviously Mark Warburton took over as manager, I think that's when I really, really kicked on and yeah, I love my 3 years there.
Are we starting to see now, you were 24 when you went to Brentford, 3 seasons, nearly 150 appearances. That was your start as a goalkeeper. Is that becoming a common thing now that keepers, until they're about 24, 25, actually get given a proper go?
Yeah, definitely. I think, just unless you get extreme circumstances. But yeah, I think that's definitely becoming more common. I just think the amount of pressure that managers are under and... the sort of the cutthroat business that it's become, that for them to risk putting a younger, inexperienced goalkeeper in for them is always going to be harder than choosing the older, safer option. Mm. So I think that's, I think it's going to become a thing that, yes, the goalkeepers are going to start their careers probably later than outfield players do.
Oh, keeper capers. So before we carry on with our chat, it's time to do this week's Keeper Capers, the part of the show where we focus on a slightly unfortunate moment in the life of a goalkeeper. This week, Wigan's keeper, Christian Walton, Rich.
Yeah, And interestingly, the fact that we've got David Button here, Christian Wharton on loan from Brighton, he's actually built a really good name for himself. And I get a lot of information through on him and a lot of people talking about him having had a very, very good season so far. Certainly one of the top performers in the Championship. That being said, a moment in the game today against Leeds, 1-1, and it was an error from him to make it 2-1. Mm-hmm. Although, interestingly, we have got David Button with us, who will be giving Christian's side of it, I'm sure.
For sure, yeah.
So you've seen the goal. What was your thoughts
like,
on
you're
the
like
goal?
His lawyer.
For those that haven't yeah. seen, the ball's come in on a bit of an angle. Obviously, Christian Walton's come out to try and smother it. It's squirmed out through his hands. It ended up being an easy tap-in for Leeds to make it 2-1, which eventually was the winning goal. But you've got your thoughts on this, David.
Yeah, I mean, firstly, just to reiterate what you said, I think all the feedback that's come from him is that he's had a really good season and has won Wigan a lot of points so far. So credit to him, and I don't think he's made many of these types of errors so far. Obviously, looking at it, it's a goal he's going to be disappointed with. But for me, first of all, he's being really positive. So that shows a sign of his confidence and the level of his game and where he's at the moment. Yeah, I don't know. I just think it's one of them where he's given the defender a shout and he's put him off somehow. I think his like slight movement towards the ball has, and I'm sure we've all been there. I don't know, has just put that little something or taken his eye off the ball. So for me, it's just unfortunate and one of those things, and I'm sure he'll bounce back and be stronger for it.
Interesting. You find that a lot, and I've seen it, and I actually do tend to agree, of course, because I think it's hard to explain unless you've actually been in that position where, and I'm trying to think of another similar, don't look at me like that, Joe.
No one who's played in goal will look at that and think that slight movement from the defender is going to have got in his head slightly, but everyone just think, oh my God, what's the goal?
Do you know, I'm trying to give a similar, I'll tell you actually a really famous similar one. Okay. Well, it's not similar, but it is, right? When Paul Robinson, don't keep humming at me and looking at me like, you'll remember this, when Paul Robinson scored against Ben Foster.
I do remember it well.
Now, if you watch that goal again, I think it was Danny Shittu, looks like he's about to go for the header, then last minute leaves it. So obviously Ben Foster's made his movement based on that. And then obviously the ball bounces over him and goes in the goal. And it looks quite a bad goal. It is quite a bad
Matt
goal.
Matt just looked at me really slowly, then looked back at you and just shook his head.
No, but because that's, honestly, you know, I'm with you on a lot of this, but I think that's clutching at straws. And I think this particular incident, I completely understand what you're saying. I think a lot of people will argue and say, if a goalkeeper is going for a ball like that, he's just got to clean everybody up in his way. Mm-hmm. He's got to take everything with him. Mm. So that's where people go, what's the keeper doing there? Mm. From a non-goalkeeper's perspective, I think that's what the argument would be.
But of course, the movements of those defenders, the movements of those around you, is going to impact what you do. That classic one where a free kick gets whipped in at the far post and goes in the far post. Of course, if the goalkeeper just goes for the ball, he makes a save. But he's also reacting to what the defenders are doing, what the strikers are doing.
In case he takes a ricochet.
Yeah.
Or something. Okay.
So similarly here, when your defender's reacting in that way and making that kind of movement, it's going to alter your decision slightly or maybe just put you off.
I do take your point. I will say, if you concede a goal from 75 yards from the opposition goalkeeper, I'm sorry, I'm pinning that on you.
Look, this is the goalkeeper's union, okay? No, yeah. Look, Ben knows that was a mistake himself, but if you watch it again, it explains it, if nothing else. And it's the same with this. If you just look at it based on the fact that he's gone to smother the ball and it's squirmed through his hands, yes, it's an error, but other things are taking place at the same time.
Yeah, we'll be back with more Keeper Capers next week. Oh, Keeper Capers. To talk about Fulham. So, at Fulham, obviously, they're now in the Premier League. I mean, leaky, to say the least, I think. They're shipping a lot of goals. And while you were there, you became second choice to Bettinelli, didn't you? How was your time at Fulham?
I get asked this a lot recently since I've moved. I think I still look back at it as quite a successful period, as obviously I was there 2 years, and it resulted in me playing 60 out of 90 odd games. First season was playoff, second season was promotion. So obviously I lost my place the second half of last season, but I still feel like I played my part and was involved in the success that we had there.
Obviously, moving on to Brighton as well, then now, what's, I suppose, the difference? I'm really interested in the difference between approaches. So, obviously, you've got Slavisa Jokanović and then Chris Hughton. They seem like dramatically different guys. How has the experience been different for you?
it's obviously slightly different from a goalkeeper because we've got our own coach and our own sort of group that we focus on away from the team.
So you don't spend that much time with the head coach or the manager?
Not really.
Really?
No, not really. We got.
Mate, I'm the same. I didn't realise that. I think that's fascinating. Well, this is what's fascinating about goalkeepers, right? The fact that you are a union, you have your own little pack. Every team has a WhatsApp group. Do you guys have a little goalkeeper WhatsApp group?
Of course, you do.
Yes. Where you slag off all the outfield players. Yeah.
Just post all the latest gloves.
Yeah. I was going to say, what gloves you got? These are sweet.
Yeah. what gloves are you wearing?
Right.
Let's change the subject.
That's a decent point. I bet there's probably not a striker's WhatsApp group or a midfielder's WhatsApp group.
Well, there might be, but we don't want to be involved. What you tend to find, genuinely, goalkeepers are normally slightly more intelligent, and I mean that like in a nice way, but slightly more intelligent than outfield players. And there's so much you need to calculate at any given moment, and so much you need to do. You need to be very intelligent now, I think, to be a top-level goalkeeper. I think it's becoming more and more for the outfield player as well. I think that you don't see the cliche of the thick footballer, I think that's dead. And goalkeeping, you need to be intelligent to be a top-level goalkeeper. I can guarantee, and I think I know this, I don't know, you did really well at like GCSEs and all that kind of stuff, didn't you?
Yeah.
Was it all A's?
Pretty much, yeah.
You tend to find that with a lot of the top goalkeepers, they're very intelligent.
How did you get on in your A-levels, Rich?
Anyway, what's the final section? And the fact that you've called them O-levels, I'm not...
I assumed.
We're not even going to go there. Right. I want to bring this back to goalkeeping, because I want to ask you, actually. Okay. Yeah, we're just glossing over that. Like, your game, you were, in my opinion, you were a bit before your time. Like, I remember when you came onto the scene, when you came to Brentford, the fact that you got the side volley, the way you distribute a ball, that wasn't something I worked on, certainly coming through. But obviously, you've focused on a lot of areas in your game that not a lot of goalkeepers your age were focusing on at that time. Was that you, yourself, when you were a kid, or was that the likes of Tony Parks?
I'd say I was lucky to work with... obviously Parksy, but obviously Perry Suckling as well, who had a lot from the academy at Spurs. But I suppose it goes back to touching on the loans as well, that I've had however many loans and I've had however that many coaches as well. So if you can pick up little bits from each of them, and obviously watching, we're obviously lucky with the Premier League now that we've got some of the best goalkeepers in the world that we can all watch and learn from. So, I don't know. I guess I was... probably not consciously thinking of it, to be honest, but it sort of happened. Probably the intelligence that you go back to. just learning and picking up things, certainly from watching and training with goalkeepers that I've been lucky enough to work with.
And what do you see as being your biggest strength as a goalkeeper?
I've probably always said crossing and kicking are my probably two biggest technical attributes, yes. Yeah. Thank you.
That's those O-levels. Yeah, there you go.
And then probably I also like to think that I've got quite a calming and positive effect on people around me as well. So they're the attributes that I'd pick.
So it's my last question to you, because I know we've got a couple of other bits and pieces I see on the sheet in front of me. Obviously, we'll have a lot of kids listening to the show, a lot of young goalkeepers. And it's the sort of question you'll always ask at the end of an interview. What advice would you give to young goalkeepers that want to make it in today's game?
I think for me now, knowing what I know, I think obviously anybody that's going to be listening to this is enough of a goalkeeping enthusiast for me to say something generic like work hard or, I don't know, work on your technique and stuff like that. But for me, it's just to pay real attention to the mental side of the game. I think it's something that obviously I owe you a lot for, to be honest. And I wish that I'd probably paid more attention to it earlier, because I just think it's just so important now with, just the way the game's gone. Like you say, the way that we're expected to play, but also the scrutiny that we're put under. I think it's just a unique position that you need to be really mentally tough to be prepared for.
I didn't tee him up for that.
You were looking at him just like, yep,
there we go. Yeah. Remember what we spoke about?
Every week, Matt and Rich insist that we do a feature called The Locker Room.
Okay.
This is where we explore what happens behind closed doors in... the locker room. So, what's the strangest thing you've ever seen in a changing room?
Don't say Rich.
Yeah, apart from Rich's clothes.
Hasn't changed.
How explicit can we go?
We can go
how
explicit.
Young are we going?
We can go explicit.
We're not going to talk about you and Jack Bonham and some of the things that you used to get on. We're not going to touch on that. No, that's probably
that
best. That
what are we talking?
No, not going there. Go on, what you got?
I won't go too bad, but I've seen someone urinating in the shower. And another teammate taking it upon themselves to then lay on the floor and sort of bathe themselves in the...
I remember this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. The thing is, gone X-rated.
No, there are worse things than that, but yeah, he's right. We can't.
For what purpose?
Just a few laughs, I think, yeah.
Funny.
A few brownie points.
This is the outfit. Sorry,
this is where they're the performing monkeys, yeah. You know, and we're just there smiling and laughing.
You were there with your quill and ink in the corner going, no, writing another, I don't know, opera. What do people do? You can tell I'm not an intelligent man. I couldn't think of a thing that intelligent people do. Do you know what? I think that is a good anecdote to leave it on. Just bathing in your teammate's urine. We know football players get close, but that is really taking it to another level. David Button, thank you very much for joining us.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
That's it for another edition of the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Thank you very much to Rich.
Thank you.
Matt, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Remember, if you want to get in touch with the show, it's really easy to do so. All you've got to do is search GK Union on Twitter or Facebook, hashtag GK Union on Instagram, or email us hello@goalkeepersunion.net. Get it? Net, like a goal, because it's a goalkeeping podcast. See you next week.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.